Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we're going to be talking about counting votes, a very important issue, and election integrity. And I'm here today with my very special guest, Ruth Wise, with the Election Integrity Project. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. Glad to be here.
So I understand that the Election Integrity Project is a statewide organization. Is that correct?
That is correct. We oversee elections for the entire state in a lot of different ways. And then I am the San Diego County Coordinator. And we get coordinators in various counties, and then we all cooperate together.
Very good. What is the mission of the Election Integrity Project?
Our overall mission is to return electoral integrity to the state of California, and it's reflected in our motto, which is every lawfully cast ballot accurately counted.
Okay, that's a good motto. Tell us what some of the integrity problems are that you found. What do you think the biggest problems with our elections are right now?
The biggest problems that we see have to do with the fact that California is not following its own laws. And it is not following a lot of federal election law. So we can look at some of the laws, and some of the laws have, you know, holes in them that we'd like to have plugged and made a little bit less fraud friendly. However, for the most part, the laws are very protective. And if they were followed, we would be a lot farther down the line to being able to trust our electoral process. But we have a large number of laws that are simply being ignored, and that causes a great deal of difficulty.
Can you give us a couple of examples?
Certainly. On the federal level, we have the HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, which was passed by Congress in 2002.
Right. And that was in response to a lot of the election problems that arose out of the very controversial presidential election that the Supreme Court wound up deciding.
Indeed. Indeed. And yet California is the only state that has been out of compliance until this year.
Why is that? Is it just a matter of not enough funding or staffing, or is there some?
No, there are federal funds. There's plenty of funding. I am not going to speculate because it would be allegations. But what has been happening is that we have a system called CalVote, which is a mishmash of registration rolls from each various county. They're all in different formats, so they can't be put together. They can't be compared. But it's called CalVote, and the Department of Justice has given California a what they called a memorandum of understanding that allowed us to use CalVote all that time as a good enough system, even though the whole point of the system we were supposed to do to be in compliance with HAVA allowed for everyone to be in the same system, so that it was easy to tell if someone was registered twice mm-hmm. or registered in multiple counties. It was easy to tell if someone were to become deceased. It was easier to get them off the rolls.
So right now there's no way to do that.
There is
San Diego, and I've re-registered here and was still registered somewhere else. There's no way to find that out?
There is a very inadequate way, because the state the county registrars do not compare their rolls with the other counties. Mm-hmm. So they would have no way. We uncovered, for example, 5,330 people who were registered concurrently in Imperial and San Diego County.
Now, it sounds like a great idea. You know, it just seems logical to say that the same person shouldn't be able to be registered two places or three places or 10 places. The flip side of that is I've heard Greg Palast speak, investigative reporter who specializes in election integrity issues also. And what he found, particularly in some of these, states that had a history of election non-integrity, shall we say, what he found there was they had a database, and they were using it as an excuse to throw people off who really weren't the same person. For example, maybe they'd take everybody named Jose Hernandez, a very common, you know, Latino name, for instance, and they would just arbitrarily say, we're going to throw them all off because we think it's a duplicate. They didn't look at middle names. They didn't look at social security numbers or driver's license numbers or anything to see if it was really the same person. And in most cases, it wasn't. So how do we design a system that has checks and balances to be sure that we don't go from one set of problems to a different set of problems.
Right. Well, when we do our research with the voter rolls, we have a very sophisticated system to check all of those things. And if we don't have what we call a high confidence match, we don't even present that to the registrar or to the Secretary of State. So our high confidence matches are, you know, virtually impeccable. It's the same name, the same address, the same birth date, the same everything.
Yeah. Okay.
And then there are also backups, because when someone is removed, that person is mailed a card saying, you know, who are you? And so there are a lot of checks and balances.
So they have an option to challenge it if they think there was a mistake.
Exactly. Yeah. They're very careful about removing someone. Mm-hmm. And especially since HAVA was passed, because now they can get in incredible legal trouble if they remove someone erroneously.
Yeah. Okay. Very good then. What about the issue of dead people voting? You know, we hear this raised all the time, and we also hear on the other side people say it doesn't really happen very much. Have you found instances of that actually occurring where there were dead people left on the rolls? Was it just a name left there, or were these people actually having someone cast votes for them?
Both. It's a very real problem. We do have, because California is what we call a convenience voting state, which means anyone who wants to can register to vote by mail anytime they want to. That means that after that person is deceased, if the process hasn't worked properly and their name is still on the rolls, they're going to continue to receive a ballot at the home, and people at the home then can fill out that ballot and mail it back in. And we have run our numbers and found in each county that we have investigated that there is a significant percentage of the deceased on the rolls that do have Wow. ballots cast in their name. Many people casting a ballot after the date of their death, and other people actually registered after the date of their death, which means someone has then usurped their information and registered in their name.
Now, you've told me that even when this can be proven, that it's hard to get anybody to prosecute. You mentioned, you know, before we came on the air about a woman who admitted she'd been voting for years for her daughter who had passed away. And what happened?
Well, that's really the big difficulty. The naysayers, the people who want to tell us, oh, don't be silly. You're looking for a problem that doesn't exist. There really isn't enough fraud to matter. They're forgetting about the fact that the bar for convicting for election fraud, or any other kind of fraud for that matter, is so high, especially here in California, that prosecutors tell us that they simply can't afford the money or the political capital to prosecute these cases that they know they won't be able to convict, because the bar is they have to prove intent, which means you have to prove what was in a person's mind and heart. And the only thing the person would have to do is say, I didn't know it was wrong. And that would be enough to exonerate them. So these cases almost never get brought forward because they are unconvictable. And that way the general public believes they don't exist, but they exist in large number.
Very troubling. Now, you know, when we talk about election integrity, we're typically talking about what happens after the votes are cast, or who casts, or who counts the votes. But in San Diego, I've noticed some problems in this particular election cycle with the registrar of voters not putting up information in a timely manner about who's running for office. So, for example, let's say if you're a candidate and you're thinking about running for office against an incumbent you don't like, but you don't want to do it if somebody else you like is already running. They weren't getting the information up in a timely manner as people were registering, you know, and qualifying for the ballot. And even after the deadline closed for people to run, that then is supposed to trigger a 5-day extension of the filing deadline in races where an incumbent opts not to run for re-election. Yet it wasn't on the website. Not one single city race in East County, El Cajon, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Santee, a lot of the smaller boards and commissions out here, it was not posted. It wasn't posted by the close of filing. It wasn't posted by the 5-day extension. And even 2 or 3 weeks later, some of these races was still not posted. And by then, we started seeing places like Ballotpedia, you know, picking up the candidates that were listed, like those were the only ones, the ones who registered early maybe, and not even listing other candidates that had qualified for the ballot. And I've talked to Michael Vu about this, and it doesn't sound like he wants to change it. He just says, oh, you know, the cities didn't get it in, we're backlogged with everything else, and we've got computer problems, and we just aren't going to do that. And Miriam, if you want to know who's running, you should contact all those districts. I said, but we cover 52 of them. I mean, this is a burden for the press. It's a burden for the public. It's a burden for potential candidates. Do you consider that election integrity? I mean, is what Michael Vu is doing different than what you see in other places? And do you think that ought to be perhaps changed to make it a requirement to get that up there?
Well, that's an element of the process that Election Integrity Project doesn't really delve into. But as a personal response, just as a citizen, that's unforgivable, especially in the day and age of computers and in electronics. It doesn't take long to enter data and get things up. And I find it completely unforgivable that they're not up. I get the message a lot, well, we're backlogged. We had on the voters' end of that kind of thing, we had voters that registered to vote or changed their registration party or changed that they didn't want to vote by mail anymore. And none of those requests were honored in time for the election. Wow. And so when I talked to Michael Vu about it, he said, well, we're still working on a backlog. That's inexcusable. There is no excuse for a backlog of that sort. They have deadlines for that reason. And if you've gotten in under the deadline, then your information should be appropriately displayed.
I wonder how his staffing compares to registrars in other places that have the population size that he's supposed to oversee. In other words, is the issue entirely that he's just not doing the job here, or is the issue that supervisors haven't funded enough for him to hire enough people to do the job, or is it a combination of both?
I would think at least a combination. There are 63 permanent employees at the Registrar's Voters Office in San Diego. Mm-hmm. During election season, that swells to close to 500, maybe a little more than 500 people as they hire on seasonal help to cover all the stuff that has to happen.
So how does that compare to, say, Sacramento or LA or some other big cities?
That's an excellent question. I have not delved into that, but it certainly is something we should look at.
Yeah, well, I'd love it if you would look into that and get back to us on that, and we'll have you back on the air to talk about it.
Happy to do that.
Okay. Let's move on to talk about election oversight. Very, very important. Now, tell us what you do in that regard.
Okay. What you were just talking about, Miriam, is a good example of what we do and why we do it. Nothing like that is going to change if the citizens don't stand up and demand that it change. They can be as lax and as incompetent as they want to be, as long as the public doesn't stand up and say, we're not going to take it anymore. And here are the steps we're going to take to make sure that it changes. One of the things that we do, one of our largest ventures with Election Integrity Project, is to train citizens to do oversight on election day, as well as during the vote count. But we train people in the election law. We give them much better training than the poll workers get. We're finding that the poll workers, for the most part, are very thrilled to see us in the polls because they know we know things they don't. They turn to us and ask us, do you know what's supposed to happen here? And since our people are armed with our materials that have the election codes actually quoted, they know that we're giving them the right information, or they can look at the election code and then look in their digest just to double check it. But we really are very helpful to them. We are not there to supervise them. We are not there to find out what they're doing wrong. We are simply the same as they are, volunteers who are stepping out, who care about having a fair and honest election, and we want to work together with them. We do help each other. We help the poll workers. They help us. We have a very cordial relationship almost always. And our people, whether they have 10 minutes or 10 hours to give us on election day, every single second that there is another pair of eyes in a polling place protecting voters and the process by which their ballots are being handled is another second that those votes are protected. So we need everybody to be willing to come out and train and give us whatever you can give us.
Now, we should mention you are a nonpartisan organization. I would like to hear some of the most outrageous violations that your observers have seen in the polling place, and also, you know, down where the central tabulation goes on, maybe at the registrar, and afterwards when they're doing, say, the audits or the going through the ballots, the provisionals. What are some of the issues that they have identified?
Well, let me see, a couple of them. There was a lady standing, she wasn't even one of our observers, but she was standing in line to vote, and the lady in front of her was submitting her ballot to the box, and the person who was doing that noticed that in that secrecy folder, there were two ballots and not one.
Whoa.
And what had happened is that when the lady was given, issued her blank ballot, they tear them off of a pad, and mm-hmm. there were two that got torn off together.
So she would have voted twice.
To the poll worker. The lady went to the ballot box, or the booth rather, and she filled out both ballots.
Uh-oh.
Then she put them back in the secrecy sleeve and attempted to get both of them put into the ballot box. Now, to me, that is absolute intent to vote twice.
Yes.
Right? She was caught by the poll worker, and therefore she was unable to submit both ballots. The frustration for me is that that got reported. We knew who the woman was. We had her name. We had all this stuff. And it was determined that there was no intent to do anything wrong, and it was not followed up on, and she just got away with that effort.
Wow.
That bothers me, that that was clear intent, and I think you could have proved that.
Yeah.
One. But one of the things that is really something I think surprises people is that a simple law, when it's not being followed, can create a great deal of chaos. California law requires that a voter has to hand your ballot to the poll worker, and only the poll worker can put it in the box. It's clearly stated in the election code. However, our county refuses to follow that law. Our county trains the poll workers to allow people to put their own ballots in if they ask to. And there are many poll workers who decide, well, it's none of my business to handle their ballot, and they turn the slot toward the voter, and they let every voter put their own ballot in. Well, why is that problematic? It's problematic because to a child that's accompanying a parent to the polling place, that could look like a trash can, and they can put in sticky candy wrappers, they can put in apple cores, they can put in stuff like that.
Yeah, they would mess up the works.
And mess it up. But more importantly, a person who wants to do damage could slip into that ballot box something that would jeopardize every ballot in the box, a leaky ink pen, a vial of acid, something like that. If they went to a precinct where they knew they weren't going to like the results coming from that precinct, they could actually get rid of a lot of votes that way. And that simple law protects that from happening. And our county, year after year, that's one of the two laws they have refused to come into line on.
What's the other one?
Right now it escapes me. I know there are two, but that's the main one that really irritates me. I think the other one I'm thinking of is a simple effort to protect voter privacy by arranging the ballot booths so that you're protected on four sides.
Mm-hmm.
Here in California, or at least in San Diego, we don't have that curtain to draw behind you.
No, we don't.
So technically, the wall is supposed to be that fourth side of the ballot booth. So
they didn't have the open side against the wall the last
time
I voted. It was facing out in the room.
We find in almost every polling place that that's not the way they arrange them. And so people walk behind you. They can see what you're doing.
Yeah.
They can walk in the door and see how you're voting. And we're trying to negotiate with the registrar to change that training and make sure that they're setting up those booths for the maximum security and privacy of the voter.
Now, you've told me that it takes 55 days after the election is over with for all of the counting to be done and the audits and so forth that are done. And it's really important to have observers around, not the same person, obviously, but a team of observers for that full 55 days. And there apparently are a lot of possible fraud points there. One of them you explained to me is how if you have certain ballots where it was provisional and somebody voted in the wrong place, that, you know, two people go off into a room and sort of correct that ballot. Explain how that works.
Yeah, you have 55 to 60 days where ballots are being processed. That means like 25 days prior to election day and then up to 30 days afterwards, where they're processing vote by mail ballots and they're also processing the provisional ballots, both of which are enormous numbers because, again, California is a convenience voting state instead of the way most states do it, where it's much more protected.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone casts a provisional ballot, almost always it's because they're not in the right polling place and they decide not to go to their own polling place, or they're not given the help from the poll worker to understand that would be a better thing to do.
So they might have voted in races they're not eligible for.
So they're voting in a different crossed some sort of boundary, and they're not voting on things they could vote for, and they're voting for things they're unentitled to vote for.
But yet they still want their votes on you know, president.
The big things.
Yeah.
You know, you're fine. So what happens is then every provisional ballot is gone through a lot of checking. And if they decide, okay, we can open and count this ballot, the last thing they have to do is to determine whether the ballot cast was the same as the ballot they were entitled to cast. If not, then two people working for the registrar's office take that cast ballot and a blank ballot to which that voter was entitled, and they go into a side room, and together they duplicate that person's ballot.
And you said that's done by one person reading off the votes and the other person.
Yes, one person reads the vote and the other person fills it in on a blank ballot. So, you know, our question is, if this is unsupervised, then we have to make sure that no one there has an agenda or is too tired or makes a mistake or, you know, is dyslexic, whatever. And I would not want to subject my vote to that. That also occurs with mail ballots, which is why we so encourage people not to vote by mail. If you do not have to vote by mail, that is a very dangerous thing to be doing.
Tell us what's dangerous. I don't do it because years ago, my vote by mail ballot didn't get here.
Right.
And I was told if I wanted my vote to count, I would have to pay Federal Express charges to get it in because it came the day before the election. Now you can at least drop it off at a polling place. But I just worried that it would get lost in the mail. What else can go wrong?
Well, what I worry about is most of these ballots that don't arrive, they're not lost in the mail. Our postal service does not lose that many things. I mean, occasionally they do. So what has happened is that someone has probably harvested that ballot out of your mailbox or en route. And therefore they are able to cast it and send it in and get it counted right away before you even notify somebody you didn't get your ballot.
Do you have evidence this has actually occurred?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Really? We have voters all the time that, you know, that this happens too. So, you know, I would not want that to be the case because then it's incumbent upon the voter to know the exact day that it's mailed out and the exact day they should receive it in their mailbox. And if it's not there, then they need to call right away and have that ballot deactivated. Well, people just don't do that. Instead, they show up in droves on election day to the polls and say, my ballot never came. I want to vote now.
And they get a provisional.
They get a provisional, which if the system works right and their ballot has been usurped and voted, is then going to get thrown out. So they've lost the opportunity to vote.
Wow.
So, but there are a million things that can happen with a ballot on the way back to the registrar's office or while it's in the registrar's office. You're not casting a private vote because your name is on it.
Mm-hmm.
Your zip code is on it. So if there were a mole at the registrar's office, a mole at the postal service who just knew they didn't like the votes coming out of that zip code, they could just sort of lose your ballot very easily.
Yeah. If they had an agenda, if they wanted to take everybody named, you know, Muhammad or with a black or Latino sounding name and toss it out or something. In or everybody from a zip code maybe that was a very conservative one.
Yeah. In the election of 2012 in the Central Valley of California, there was a postal worker who found large numbers of bags, those great big postal bags full of mail that was about to get shipped off to the dead letter office and I guess burned or something. And he happened to look inside. The only thing in those bags was vote by mail ballots that voters had entrusted to the postal service and had never gotten delivered to the registrar to be counted. And it was 4 months after the election. The election was certified. All of those people were disenfranchised and they did not know.
Well, sadly, it could happen. It's
and that made
rare,
newspapers in Fresno and stuff. But my question is, how many other places did that occur and it never got caught?
Who knows?
I would not subject my ballot to that kind of thing. Vote in person at your own polling place. You get 13 hours on election day to do it. It's not hard to do.
Yeah, I always think there ought to be a way you can check to see if your ballot ever made it there, even from the polls. Tell me about it in a minute, but I was going to tell this story that years ago out in Potrero, it wasn't vote by mail ballots that went astray there, but they found an entire ballot box from a polling place just dumped in a field someplace weeks after the election. So I guess, you know, election fraud is a long tradition, and it seems like there's ways to do it no matter what. We all worry about the electronic voting machines, which can be very riggable and dangerous, but even without them, sometimes
which is why you need citizen oversight and vigilance, because politics, I like to say, politics is all about money and power, and those are two of the three motivating factors of the negative side of human nature. So you know that if you leave yourself open to bad people doing bad things, it's going to occur either in small pieces or in large numbers. And so we need to be vigilant as citizens. We need to provide oversight. We need to be there. So some of our observers who decide that they would like to take the evening shift do stay and watch the closing down of the polls. They watch the handling and the making sure that the ballots are all reconciled with the numbers. And then they follow the ballots to the drop-off point.
Excellent.
To make sure that they're not switched or that somebody doesn't stop and go in for a beer or whatever.
Toss a box out the window.
The more people that we have willing to do that, that doesn't take very long. If you give 1 hour of your time in the evening
to go out, watch
a close down of a polls and then follow them to the drop-off point, you've protected every ballot in that entire polling place, and it just took an hour of your time to do it.
Yeah, very important. What about the voting machines? Are there things people should be aware of with that?
Well, you know, there's so many different kinds of machines. It's really hard to say. We don't utilize machines a lot in California.
Mm-hmm. I should clarify, we don't use the paperless ones, which are the worst, which can be rigged flip votes and it's untraceable and with no paper trail, you can't. There's just no way to correct it. What we use here more are things like the optical scan ballots, which, you know, in theory, there are ways that those can be tampered with, but at least there is a paper trail. So there is a way if somebody wanted to audit it or a candidate wanted to pay for a recount, there is a way to go back and do that.
Well, recently I've been receiving enormous numbers of videos and other things in my email boxes showing how people have testified that they were hired to rig a certain counting machine or rig
I've
a certain
interviewed
voting
someone,
machine.
Yeah, a programmer told me how they
And so
did
we
it.
Know it has occurred. We know it can occur. And if it has occurred and can occur, we know it will occur again. Mm-hmm. And that's a real toughie because how do you have oversight on that?
Well, one of the things I learned when I wrote about this a number of years ago was part of it is making sure that those machines are really secure, you know, before and after the election, because at least if you can limit it to where only people who work for the registrar have access to it. But we found instances where they were letting poll workers take home, voting machines, you know, days before they were out in their garage, and anybody walking by, these machines have since been decertified, but anybody walking by with a BlackBerry could hack in and change the code. And you'd say, well, how hard is that? Well, these were made by a company named Diebold, and I think the password was Diebold or something like that. Some of them had a password of 11111. I mean, they hadn't even bothered to put secure passwords on. They had seals on them. Yeah, supposedly a nice little seal. That's good. But the problem was you could order the seals on the internet. So you could just take one off, break it, and then replace it, and nobody would ever know.
And you may also have seen that there is a device that's $12 at Home Depot that if you can get close enough to a machine to attach it, then you can remotely, as close as 400 feet or yards, I forget which, you can actually manipulate how that machine is tabulating as people are voting on it. So there's no end to the number of bad things. And it seems that the black hats are always more numerous than the white hats out there in the computer world. So, you know, that's why we're very, skeptical of that kind of voting. We have people wanting to, why can't I just vote from home on my BlackBerry, my computer, my tablet? Yeah. And I'm thinking, are you kidding? The Pentagon, the highest levels of security have been hacked within this last year, and you think they're not going to hack the voting system? It's very important to be a lot more secure than that.
Well, it's interesting. The Justice Department right now is looking into the potential. Apparently, there were two voting systems in two states that they found that have been hacked into, and they have some reason to believe that it might have been originating perhaps from Russia.
Well, those were the voter rolls.
Yeah, voter rolls. But if they could hack a voter roll, they could probably hack, you know, an electronic, you know, an online system, for example. Some of the military is allowed to vote online.
Now, my question is always to go back and say, well, what country are they accusing and what did they think the hack accomplished and whose side would that country likely be on? And some of that's not adding up for me personally. And I'm thinking that this could potentially be a way of be an internal job and then just blame it on and an international thing.
It certainly could be. It could be one of the campaigns. It could be some rogue, you know, group out there that wants to influence. It could just be someone who wants to steal the data.
Move immediately being made is the federal government saying, oh, okay, then we'll step in and we'll take over the security. And it appears that it could potentially be a move to federalize elections, which is a very, very bad thing. We don't want all of this in the hands of a single bureaucracy at the top in Washington, D.C. The whole point, the reason that the founders set up our country the way they did and set up the system of states' rights is so that all of this kind of stuff would be watered down.
It's kind
of
like,
it's important that a state stays in control of its own electoral process. And it looks as if the federal government is trying to break in on that now and use these hacking things as an excuse to do it.
Well, it reminds me of the old saying, you know, Stalin once said, it's not who votes that counts, it's who counts the votes.
Yep, exactly.
So that said, if people want to get involved with the organization and they want to help you be an election observer or either before, during, after the election, during the whole counting process, how do they get in touch with you and where can they go for more information?
Well, thank you very much. We have in-person training for poll workers here in San Diego County because I do the training and I've already set up a schedule for that. If they want to know what that schedule is, they can reach me at, the best thing to do would be to email me at info@electionintegrityproject.com and indicate that they want to be an observer in San Diego and that will get straight to me. Anyone who's in a different county, again, you could go to that same info@electionintegrityproject.com or go straight to our website, which is electionintegrityproject.com, because our training is also online.
Ooh, very good.
You can access it. You can do it easily. There are, I think, 10 segments of say 8 to 12 minutes each. You can watch them all at once, or you can watch one now and one tomorrow and one next week and build them up until you have gotten the full training. And then we will be in touch with you and help you to figure out how to observe in your own county, give you a hotline number to report things when you are concerned. And so the more people who can do that, the better.
Very good. Listeners, we've been speaking with Ruth Weiss with the Election Integrity Project. Ruth, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.